All right, welcome back from break. Welcome back. We are literally on the home stretch for today. And man, as I understand it, we're in for a big old treat with Beverly. So Howard's going to jump on here in a second and give you a really, really cool intro, which is awesome. I am very excited to hear what you have to say. And also, I think that the message that you have is so timely. So Howard, why don't you go ahead and do our intro, and then I'll be available to close us off when Beverly is done.
You betcha. You guys hear me okay? Mm-hmm. I've got all kinds of stuff going on. It's like you got the wrong camera going. I know. I don't have enough USB ports. My mic isn't. You know, a lot can happen on a short break. Anyway.
We hear you. You sound good.
We hear you. Shut up. Beverly Parrish. So Chris Parrish joined up in the inner circle, been a great client. And he read my dream book, the one that I was talking about earlier, and wherever it is. Got a whole bunch of them on the shelf over there. And he says, I read in your book that you want to learn how to sail. And I said, yeah. He's right there. They are right there in Houston. So I went sailing with Chris and Beverly and Hannah. And I met Jack, met some of their family. And we had a conference in Houston. And Beverly joined a little group that Michelle Prince and I had called Two Peas in a Pod. Partridge, Prince, Pod, on how to write a book and how to publish that book and all that stuff. So I got to really know Beverly through that group, and we had meetings in various places in Florida and different places. And I read her book. Remind me the name of that book that I read.
Beyond the Diploma, Homeschooling with the End in Mind.
Yeah. And again, even though it was about homeschooling, I thought, man, this is a phenomenal personal development book. There was so much good stuff in there. And as Sherry said, this is timely because so many people are now having to learn how to homeschool, basically, right? And so I want to introduce to you my friend, Beverly Parrish, and she's going to share with us what it means to do parenting with the end in mind. And before she does that, I may not be back with you guys, so Sherry's going to close us out. And I want to remind you that tomorrow morning I'm going to have some really special stuff for members. I don't want you to miss a thing, because some of the things that we're going to do tomorrow you don't even know about yet. So be on time, 8:00 a.m. Central Time, and I promise you're going to be blessed as a result of being there. And you're going to be blessed right now, Beverly Parrish. Thank you for being with us, Beverly.
Thank you, Howard. And I don't need to do anything quiet, right?
Many different prayer and
interests. No, we just need to mute somebody. There we go. Okay. I hear you loud and clear. I see okay. You. No handouts, right? You're just going to speak to us?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. Be sure to tell them about any resources you have, books, and my team can put it in the link. And I'm going to go peek in on the youth sessions real quick.
Okay.
All right. Perfect.
Thanks, Howard.
Thank you.
So you might be able to see I'm channeling my inner Howard Partridge back here. I got my wannabe Howard bookcase back there. I am glad to be here with you today, and pardon me if I'm a little clunky. I'm not accustomed to being on this end of the Zoom meeting, so if I'm a little clunky, please pardon me. I am excited about this topic. As Howard said, this is very timely. It's a passion of mine. Families, parenting, kids, all that is a passion of mine. For one, because I have a large family. So by way of introduction, Chris and I have been married 38 years tomorrow, and we have 7 kids. Our oldest is 36, our youngest is 19. I have 6 boys and 1 girl. and everybody's gone but Hannah and my youngest, Jack, who's 19. Hannah, my daughter, has Down syndrome, and so she's kind of our perpetual kid at home, perpetual student, and we'll have a different kind of family, not an empty nest. But anyway, I'm excited to talk about this because I feel like way long ago, 36 years ago, when we were embarking on our parenting journey as young marrieds, we had the privilege of coming into contact with what I feel is some really impactful information. And it is information that we weren't getting in our church, we weren't getting from our families, from our peers, certainly not from culture. And it set us on a trajectory that I think dramatically affected our lives. And as we talk about it, it won't be unfamiliar to you, but I think it might be novelly applied to the family situation. So that idea of proactively, intentionally thinking about what do you want to do with your family was a novel thing to us. And I think that we can sometimes set this area of our life on autopilot and just assume it's all going to turn out all right in the end, and assume that, you know, your kids grow up and they get out of your house and they go off on their own and they do their own thing. And if you're just raising them to adulthood physically, and while that's a plus, surely there's more to it than that. And we sometimes spend, I think, a little more attention figuring out how we're going to get out of debt, how we're going to create a retirement account for us, how we're going to move our business further down the road, or move our career further down the road, or move our fitness level further down the road. All these other areas of our life, I think we give more intentional treatment to than we do thinking about, what do I want with my family at the end of the day? How can I create a culture that I believe is important in my family? And so that's what we're going to talk about. So of course, we're preparing our kids to one day leave our homes and support families, but certainly there's much more to supporting a family than just the ability to provide financially. And the things that we do day in and day out in our family culture, in our homes, is going to dramatically affect our grown kids when they leave our homes, and their children after that. It is a legacy that we leave. So without intentional examination of this, I think we can just go on autopilot. And it only takes a cursory look at culture today to see that culture is not friendly to probably what I'm going to assume, what most of us want for our families. And at the same time, culture in media, in politics, in entertainment, music, sports, it just seems like even in academia, higher education has set itself to aggressively change the society in which we live. And I say, no, that is the realm of parents. That is the realm of the family to mold and create and direct people's thinking. And if you and I as parents don't embrace this challenge and take it seriously and come up with goals and a plan, our kids are going to be at the mercy of a very aggressive culture that has a very distinct end goal in mind. And again, I'm going to assume it's probably not what you and I might, you know, might have as parents. And whether we like it or not, in the same way, when we show up on a job site or when we show up in a business meeting, our appearance shows what we think is important. When people look at our families and the way we treat one another and the things we spend our time doing, we send the message of what we think is important. And so we need to be aware that we're telling a story with our family. And I want to be careful because I know sometimes when you know, there's a couple of things you don't want to talk about in groups of diverse people, politics and religion and parenting and that kind of stuff. But I know we can tend to put up our defenses and feel judged. And so hear me now. Let me just be totally honest. Chris and I are very typical. Our kids, very typical. We're just average. I don't have any merit scholars. I don't have any Olympic athletes. We're just the average kind of family. And the one thing that I think we really had going for us, and I know a lot of you already have that going for you as well, and that is Chris was a visionary way back when. And because my wagon was hitched to his, I just kind of followed him along. And he was inspired by the things we were learning to create this vision for our family, goals for our family. But we're not perfect. We didn't do it all right. We had conflicts in our home. Everything didn't work out like we planned. So don't hear me saying, do what I do and you'll be perfect like we are, because we're not perfect. And I just want to nudge you a little bit to maybe expand your thinking that you can have something different. I remember thinking when I was a young mom, and I remember thinking this because this is what everybody said to me was, oh, everybody's family is like that. Oh, all kids are like that. Oh, that's just to be expected. You just have to endure. And then one day they leave your house. And I thought to myself, well, I don't like that idea. That's not a very inspiring idea. And I think I want us to set aside our defenses and preconceived notions, and let's turn our hearts toward thinking long-term, what is in the best interest of my kids as they're leaving my home as adults. And let's not choose out of fear of, you know, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, they won't succeed in life. Let's take the time to think clearly and look at our family and think, okay, what is it that I want? So I want to stretch your thinking beyond just enduring, you know, stretch, beyond enduring the terrible twos and the teenage years and everything that comes in between, with just the assurance that, oh, well, one day they're going to leave your home and, you know, then, whew, you know, you will have done your job, because there's more to it than that. And so I suggest some questions for you just to get you kind of thinking about, if you haven't already, what is it I really want for my family? So ponder these with me. Sometimes we have an elevator pitch for our business, you know, your 3-minute spiel about what your business is about. So what if you had to come up with an elevator pitch for your family? What would it be? What if you had to come up with a family motto? What would it be? What succinct little phrase would you want to identify your family? And at the end of your parenting journey, at the end of this time where you have your kids under your roof, what is it that you long to see in your children as they leave your home and embark on their own lives? Are we satisfied with what we have in our homes right now? And by that, I mean the relational things. Howard was just talking about this, the relational things that go on amongst our family members. Are we satisfied with that? Or would we enjoy something different? And sometimes, you know, we kind of get stuck there at like, well, what else is there? You know, this is how it is. And I say, no, it isn't. It isn't how it is. But how would we know if all we feed ourselves is what's normal, what's out there? If all we do is feed ourselves media and entertainment and the political news, and if that's all we feed ourselves that gives us this very negative, coarse, base view of people's interactions with each other, then we don't even know that anything else is possible. But why would we tolerate that in our own families with the people we love more than anyone else on the planet? Why would we tolerate, you know, this kind of base is the word again that comes to mind, this way of treating one another? And, you know, almost anything in life can be changed with intentional effort, and our family relationships and the direction our family is going is no different than that. And so I think we have to be honest with ourselves and recognize that the ability to participate in the conception and birth of a child does not equip us to be parents. And in most other areas of our life, we readily admit that we probably need some input, but I'll bet that there's a lot of us who really didn't equip ourselves to be good parents. We just sort of thought, well, I gave birth to them, you know, surely that's sufficient to know how to raise them. And I beg to differ. And I think that we can apply some of the things that we learned from Howard and his conferences and apply them to our families to great success. So let me ask you this. Who are your role models? If you can't find people in person, what about someone in books or in movies or in history or in your business dealings? What kind of people do you admire, and what is it about them that you admire? And if you call yourself a follower of Christ, I submit to you that the Word of God is the best source for what we should be looking for in how we're supposed to relate to other people. And that's in direct conflict to the way the world tells us we ought to be relating to other people. And so I think that to proactively search for really wonderful role models wherever we find them, excuse me, and strive for those things in our own families should be the goal. So normal, no. I think exceptional. And when I say exceptional, I don't mean exceptionally gifted in athletics or academics or music or whatever. I mean exceptional. Let's be exceptional in our family life and the way we treat one another, the way we respond and support one another. So my desire is to inspire you to intentionally pursue what it is that you feel like your family could become. And so play what if with me for just a moment. What if, and I say this because this is our home before we started, what if your home could be characterized by peace and calm and kind words instead of grouchy, pouty, yelling, snarky, condescending, rude? And I'm talking about kids and parents. It goes both ways. Kids see mom and dad talking one another that way. We in anger can talk to our children that way, or we can allow our children to talk to one another that way. Is this the culture that we want to allow in our homes? And I think our family deserves nothing less than a really inspiring vision for maybe something different in our homes. And that vision would be to rise above just normal and treat one another in an exceptional way and create this kind of pack, if you will, that is moving toward a common goal. And so the trouble is, everywhere you look, everyone just says, oh, no, just like I heard, that's just normal, and everyone's like that. And it's almost like the crab pot mentality. You try to climb out of the crab pot and all the other crabs pull you down. So I think we should be bold and break out of that. And I want to propose to you, if you perhaps didn't grow up in a family with what you may be thinking I'm suggesting are idyllic, unrealistic expectations. I didn't grow up, my family's normal, and you know, we didn't have what I'm proposing. Get yourself in front of some old black and white TV shows and movies. Now, I'm not suggesting we go back to the days of old, the good old days, but I am suggesting that what we feed ourselves today is very different than what people used to be fed from entertainment. And there are some really wonderful examples of manly character and feminine qualities and respectful behavior between kids and parents and husbands and wives and families. There was this cohesiveness of families working together in kind of a family ethos. I love that word. I have two, one former Marine and one active duty Marine. And so I kind of skew, you know, toward that kind of thinking. But, you know, what kind of ethos do we want for our family? And so get a glimpse of those possibilities and even in a modern, for a more modern movie that presents some of these things, I love Downton Abbey because they're so refined and there's this calm, peaceful attitude. And now I'm not saying we all go act like that, but I'm just saying there was a level of decorum and respect and regard in this family that created a family environment that was desirable and made people want to come home to be there. Imagine, if you will, a family environment where you sit down to dinner together and no one has a device and you look each other in the eye and you smile at each other and you have a conversation. And I can tell you that happens. And it doesn't happen without intentional effort, but those little tiny habits that we can create can move us toward something in our families that maybe we didn't think was possible. And I made the comment that it takes effort and intentional action. So you will be different. I'll say that often, probably. You will be different. One of the things that we felt was important in our family was to limit time on a device. And so my now 19-year-old had a flip phone until he was 18 years old, and he was mortified. And we used to say, sorry. I mean, we didn't even give our kids phones until they had jobs and could pay for them. And then it got issued a hand-me-down flip phone and over and over. And when he finally got his smartphone, it was his dad's hand-me-down smartphone. But the point was, we were trying to take these steps to guard our family, to guard what was going on in our home, and to create this environment. No, we're going to force the issue. We're going to, if you will, for lack of a better word, force the issue of dialogue and conversation and all the things that help us to connect as family members. So, you know, what if you could enjoy your family's presence beyond just a weekend in Destin, you know, where there's so much wonderful stuff, like last year at the Dream Retreat, so much wonderful stuff that you didn't have time to get irritated with your family, but what if you could experience that in the day to day? And that's a possible thing. You know, we're creating, when we have young children in our home, I realize not everybody has young children, but you may have grandchildren, or you probably have influence over others. We're raising men and women. We're not, the goal is not to create this idyllic childhood, although that's a wonderful thing, but we're raising men and women who will go and impact their world. And we have to think about, what is it I want to create to launch these men and women, you know, fully equipped to thrive. So when you think about what is it you want, think about dreaming big. And I'm not talking about big SAT scores and big impressive colleges to attend and big houses and big titles and big bank accounts. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about dreaming big for your family in terms of creating men and women who will influence others, who will serve others. Some of them will serve in big, impressive ways, and others will serve in little ways that go unnoticed to the rest of the world, but they're being faithful in what they've been called to do. And that ought to be what we're trying to do in our families. So we kind of talked about the problem, the root of the problem being we just accept this normal and endure it, and think that there are no other options. And there are other options. But if we want other options, if we want something else, we got to do something different. You know that phrase, if you want something different than what you've always had, you have to do something different than what you've always done. I know that's not lost on anyone here, because that is like what you know Howard teaches us for business people. But so let's go back to some questions. If you were going to create a family mission statement, what would it be? What would you want to be known by? So I ask myself, when someone thinks of the Parrish family, what is it that I want them to think of? What adjectives do I want to come to their minds that describe us? And I'm not talking about it in a prideful way. I'm talking about, you know, God puts us in families on purpose, and it's for that a purpose, and it should be evident in the acting out of our lives. So I want to suggest something that I find just so helpful. We did this, Howard mentioned, I was in Two Peas in a Pod, the book writing pod that he did with Michelle Prince. And one of the things we did was mind mapping. And I challenge you to do that about your family, creating a family vision. Either do a mind map or create lists, just brainstorm. What are the things that I would love to see in my family? And don't edit, you know, don't say, okay, I can't use that. That's not a real goal. Can't have a time and a quantifier. Don't edit in that way. Just dream for a minute. In the same way we create those dream posters, dream about what your life in your family could be like. Sort of a what do I want to be when I grow up kind of thing. And then dare to imagine it's a real possibility. Ask yourself, how do I want to be remembered in my family? What is it I want my family to remember about me? What matters the most? And in Zig's performance planner, he has these areas of life, physical, mental, spiritual, recreational, social, financial, career, and of course he has family as well. Use those as ticklers to think about fleshing out for your family those kinds of areas, what you want your family to look like. And I love Michael Hyatt's book, Living Forward. He has these four very specific questions that I think particularly lend themselves to family. And so I want to read them to you. I've tweaked it a bit to fit this instance, but the first one is, what is my purpose as a parent or a grandparent, or if you if you don't have children, as some an influence or someone who influences those around me? What is my purpose? And then envision the future. And you write this down. You know, you write down, my purpose as a parent is, and you just write. I envision a future in my family where, and you just write, what is it that you envision? Maybe it is you envision merit scholars and rocket scientists and business owners and opera singers, whatever you imagine for the future, whatever you envision, you write that down. And then this one is, I think, the real helpful one, and that is, what is my current reality? You know, just like when you start a weight loss plan, you got to get on the scale the first time so you can know when you're losing weight, when you're affecting change. So I love that question. What is my current reality? And then this is the last one. What specific commitments am I going to make to do something that works toward that future? What specific thing am I going to do? It's hard to think, oh, I want to create this family where we all love one another and everybody gets along and all that kind of stuff. But okay, yeah. What am I going to do? What is it I'm going to do to get there? So let me give you an example. It was really important to us in our family that our children be mannerly. And sometimes manners get a bad rap because people think, oh, you're just putting on the dog. Well, I submit to you, if you only use your manners when people come to your house or in front of people that you want to impress, then you're a hypocrite and you are just putting on the dog. But if you use manners to help other people feel comfortable and at ease and to show your deference to them, and you exhibit those same manners to one another in your home, then you are caring for people and you are showing that you love them. So that was what we wanted. And you can imagine with a household of kids and predominantly males that, you know, you don't just come out of the womb mannerly. It takes some effort. And I didn't really, you know, it's not like I grew up in some very formal environment where we knew manners and all the, I'm not talking about manners where you put your forks and how you eat. I'm talking about manners and caring for people and treating people with kindness and respect. So we set about to feed them that through movies and dialogue and stuff. And we decided that they could practice it. And at first we just practiced one another. And we started with a very basic thing, which is when you meet someone, you put your hand out, you look them in the eye, you smile, and you say hello. And even your littlest ones could do this, and our littlest ones could do this. Now, with a bunch of kids, we had the gamut of chatty Cathys who like to visit with anybody and those who were much more quiet. And so we decided on the bare minimum, which was you don't have to carry on a conversation, but you do have to put your hand out and smile and say hello. Look them in the eye and say hello. So we would practice this. And then we would invite people to our home for dinner so they could practice in the real world. So they could practice when another kid came over saying, you know, hey, would you like to come in my room and play? I mean, they graduated to that kind of more advanced mannerly behavior. But the point was, it was important to us for our kids to learn how to treat other people. And we also wanted to host other people in our home as a means of establishing community. And we felt like that was a good training ground for our kids. And it blessed other people to, you know, it's nice to come to someone's house and they've prepared the meal for you. You don't have to do it. So, you know, that was something else that we thought was helpful. And so it was just that simple, just stick your hand out and introduce yourself. And then we built on it from there. So my point is, whatever it is you want to implement in your home and you've determined where you are and what are you going to do to get there, just don't go overboard with your expectations. Just start small and create one little habit at a time. And the big thing that influences family, your family culture, and I'll try to pull this together here in a minute. These little actions that we take that show that we are preferring our brother, that we are considering others above ourselves, become habits when we require it all the time, and we require this consistent behavior to everyone in the family. And that was what we were after. It was important to us that they treat outsiders with respect, but it was more important to us that we created a family of mutual respect and mutual regard. And let's face it, if you and I can suck it up when we don't feel good and be kind to a client or nice to an employee, we are able to do it, and our kids are able to do it too. So it is possible. So in our, I think stump our toe here sometimes because in our incessant need to be real and honest and, you know, celebrating being a hot mess, we allow ourselves to indulge our base, coarse, impolite nature. And why would we do that? Why would we do that with our families? Why wouldn't we try to elevate the situation? And so that's why I say it's important that you maintain whatever it is you're trying to create in your family. You maintain it all the time, not just with outsiders, but inside the family. So back to some questions to ask yourself. As you're trying to decide, like I said, manners were important to us. As you're trying to decide what's important, what you want your family to be about. So think about the kinds of things that are important to you. Is political activism important to you? Environmental activism, entrepreneurship, ministry, service and volunteering, whatever it is that's important to you as husband and wife, if it's okay to make that important to you as a family. Yes, we are all individuals and we need to respect and have a high regard for everyone's individual interests, but it is okay to create a kind of a family culture where everyone is moving in a similar direction. So ask yourself, when my kids are gone out of, from my home, have left my home, what do I want them to value? What worldview do I want to pass along? By worldview, I mean the glasses through which you view the world. And I said, I'm a Christian, and so I view a world through, I try to view a world through biblical glasses. What does the Bible say about what's going on? That's my worldview. Your worldview may be different, but what worldview do I want to pass on to my kids? And again, I want to give you permission to proactively try to pass that on, because I can assure you the rest of culture is working quite hard to impress upon our children their worldview. So there's a book I read a couple of years ago called How Children Succeed. And the author is Paul Tough. And he set about to look at successful adults and work his way backward and try to find the common things in these children's lives that help them to be successful adults. And they thought it would be things tied to like the parents' economic status or education status or Head Start programs or other kind of interventions and extras. And what they found was the thing that made people successful later in life was character, grit, initiative, responsibility, determination, self-sacrifice, all those kinds of things. And that is the realm of you and I as parents. That is the realm of the family. That is not the realm of culture. That is our job as parents and grandparents and others who influence families to raise up another generation with those kinds of character qualities. So contemplate this. This is one of my favorite questions. What is my greatest hope for my kids when they leave my home? And I hope it's not something like a big house or a secure job. I mean, really, for your children as people, what is my greatest hope? So I've suggested that you dream bigger than impressive cars and houses and titles, and dream about the people your children will become, the men and women and the character that will define them. Dream about that. And then have a look at your present situation and see how you're doing, tracking toward that goal. So I want to show you, I don't know, Santiago, are you there to show my screenshots of our family goals? There he is. Okay. All right. So this is a copy of our family goals. And we put these together in August of 1992. So we had been married almost 10 years before we put this together. And I'll read it to you because it's kind of small. I don't know, maybe I can read it. So, and we have not changed these since then. You'll even see a little typo down there. Lifestyle and career. And this was just our personal thing. So, you know, if I'm not asking you to agree, I'm just telling you who we were about, what we were about, to know Christ and to make him known, to develop a true servant's heart, to create a self-sufficient family business, to live debt-free, to maintain a spirit of peace in the home, to practice hospitality, to be our children's heroes. And then our goals for homeschooling, because we had been homeschooling for 2 years at this time. So our specific goals toward homeschooling. And I said in the beginning that I feel very fortunate that one of the things that was different about us that is probably already present in you guys is as he was a goal setter and I just, you know, followed him along. But you know, there is that magic about writing this down. So this hangs in our bathroom. I still get choked up about it. It hangs in our bathroom still after all these years. And it's kind of warped. Not all the warped looking on this paper is art. Some of it is actual kind of warped with mold and humidity and stuff. Santiago, you can take it down now. Thank you. It worked its magic. It directed our decisions. I didn't read it every day, and Chris reads them every day, and that was huge. But I didn't read it every day, and even I, you know, that I was able to take advantage of that subconscious. We've committed this, and somehow you just make decisions that make it happen. Now, I'm not suggesting that you make goals and you don't ever look at them. What I'm saying is, the power of written goals, even for your family, to make those things happen. Now, would I change some of those things now? Maybe, like that last one about being my children's heroes. I'm a little sensitive about that, having two sons in the military. I don't really want to think of myself as a hero compared to them. So I might change that now. But at the time, that was important. What we meant was we want our kids to look up to us. That's what we meant. So I encourage you to do the same and post it where you see it every day. Now, I would do something different now. It's too late because almost everybody's gone, but I would post it where my family could see it. It was posted where Chris and I could see it every day, but not where our kids could see it. And I would post it where my kids could see it, were I able to do it again. Add it to your planner, make it your screensaver, draw it on your mirror, draw it on the mirror of the kids' bathroom. Just wherever, get it in front of you. It's something to aspire to, and there is power in those written goals, as you know, we all know. So is it of not such greater importance? Now, our business goals and our personal goals and all those things are vital too, but is not the goals for our family greater than any of those? And so I just dare you to write them down, post them where you and your kids can see them. And it's also a great conversation starter. And you never know who you might impact by them seeing your goals up in your house. But the beauty of having those was that it allowed us to say no to the things that didn't move us toward what we were after. And you know, there's so many wonderful opportunities in life, things to participate in, things to learn, places to serve, all kinds of wonderful things. But I want to encourage you to exercise your ability to say no as it applies to your family. And so one of the things I like to do is to get a regular, like the old fashioned calendars, the monthly calendars, you know, maybe tear it all apart and tape it all together. You got a little area rug on your floor and write down every single solitary thing that you do as a family: church, Awanas, Taekwondo, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, school, PTO meetings, whatever. Every 2 weeks we go to grandma's, you know, we go to Destin Dream Retreat every year, and write it all down and look at your goals and see how they line up, because it's easy to fool ourselves when we have all of our family activities in our devices. But when you spread it out in an area rug on your floor, when you've taped all those calendars together, it is irrefutable where you're spending your time. So I encourage you to do that, to get a good picture of where you are so you know what things you might need to say no to. So you know that the right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. And that's a really powerful maxim to carry with you through life, because we do go through seasons. And now, having been on the planet for a while and raised kids and seen them leave my home and start to raise their own children and going through our own seasons, I see that some things that are appropriate at one time in our life might not be appropriate in another. And just because someone else needs you to fulfill that need doesn't mean that you should fulfill that need. So as you're paring down your schedule, as you're asking yourself what is important, give yourself the grace to make mistakes and tumble and get back on the road. Just today, Chris and I had this conversation. He was relaying to me the things he was learning this morning in the conference. And we're like, yep, we're off in the ditch. we're seriously in the ditch. And we're just going to get back on the path because we know what the path is because we have these goals to guide us. So stack the deck in your favor by keeping it simple and giving yourself permission to say no. And I want to show you one more thing. And I didn't give this to Santiago to use as a screenshot. So I'm going to do my own screenshot. Watch this, people. Ha ha ha. I'm just laughing. I'm just kidding. I'm going to tell you what this is, and we'll get them to post it in the chat box. This is called the 21 Rules of This House. And it was written when my oldest was young. So this is almost 40 years old. And its intent was to guide the behavior of toddlers, to help you teach your toddlers to be pleasant humans to live with. And I noticed as I was reading it over for another purpose, and I thought, you know what? This is what shaped our family. And let me tell you where to get it, and then we'll get them to post it. It is at, let me just tell you what to Google. The 21 Rules of This House, and the author is Greg Harris. G-R-E-G-G. Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S-S. But I want to read these to you. And like I said, it occurred to me that this was what we wanted our family to become. All these are just little maxims about behavior, but for us, they became the family culture that we wanted to create. So listen to me here for a minute. The 21 rules of this house. In this house, we obey our Lord Jesus Christ. In this house, we love, honor, and pray for one another. There's a lot of history with this, sorry. In this house, we tell the truth. We consider one another's interests ahead of our own. We speak quietly and respectfully with one another. We do not hurt one another with unkind words or deeds. When someone needs correction, we correct him in love. When someone is sorry, we forgive him. When someone is sad, we comfort him. When someone is happy, we rejoice with him. When we have something nice to share, we share it. When we have work to do, we do it without complaining. We take good care of everything God has given us. We do not create unnecessary work for others. When we open something, we close it. When we turn something on, we turn it off. When we take something out, we put it away. When we make a mess, we clean it up. When we do not know what to do, we ask. When we go out, we act just as if we were in this house. And when we disobey or forget any of the 21 rules of this house, we accept the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So my point is, like I said, we originally got this to kind of help us to corral our little ones into good behavior. And they were simple rules that we were following. But they created this family culture where we treated one another with kindness and respect. We considered others' interests ahead of our own. I hope you see the spiritual principles behind some of these. And it created this family that we didn't just endure, and it helped us to abide by and achieve those goals that I showed you. And again, we're not perfect. I'm not, you know, saying, woohoo, look at us. I'm just saying that these little things, when we're faithful in the little things, they create something big. So don't respond out of habit and normal and the way it's always been. Dare to dream something bigger for your family. Dare to dream about who your young men and women will become when they leave your home. And will your family be odd? Yes. You'll be very odd. We were always odd. Even in our church, we were just strange because we were just about a different task than everybody else. And it was our task. You know, I'm not saying it was better than others. It was just our task. And that was what we set about to do, was to create this parish family. That's what we were doing. And so you will be odd. Your kids won't fit in. And I hope that's what you want. I hope you want your kids to not fit in with the crowd, because the crowd is not doing very well these days. And so be bold and do what it takes to have an amazing family. It's not just the luck of the draw. Chris used to always laugh. People would tell us, oh, you just lucked out and you got great kids. And he'd say, what does that mean? Do you thump them on the head, you know, and they plunk like a melon? Does that mean you got a great kid? And And we thought to ourselves, no, we worked really hard. All those, these rules, we worked really hard to create this family environment that we were glad to be a part of. And our families deserve nothing less than our attention to this kind of big picture thinking. And so I leave you with this. For such a time as this, we have been given this responsibility, the stewardship of a family and those entrusted to our care. So tend it well. Tend it well. Thanks.
Man, I wish I could take every single person off of mute because I'm guessing there would be thunderous applause for you, Beverly. Wow. I was writing so many things, so many great nuggets in what you had to share and delivered from the heart, incredibly well presented. What an absolute treat and a great way to end our day today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So Santiago already posted the link to your website. And if Santi, if you'll go ahead and post that again, that would be wonderful. And then you've got the Greg Harris link in the chat session as well. And I encouraged everybody, hopefully they did, to just print screen and grab that beautiful treasure that you guys took off the wall. What a great, great presentation, and one that lifts everybody up and says, hey, are you getting what you want? And if not, change it. Great mm-hmm. presentation. Thank you so much. So tomorrow, and you're getting lots and lots of love out of the chat session. So I'll print that for you. Can you see it? I think you can.
No, see. Let's see.
In the chat?
Oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, good. You can see it. So just kind of, you know, read all that and soak it up. But man, super inspiring and very, very motivating and moving your message today. Thank you so much. So tomorrow we'll be back here at 8 a.m. Central Standard Time. For those of us on the West Coast, that's 6 a.m. Get up bright and early. And we'll be looking forward to another really great day of our virtual Destined Dream Retreat. So Beverly, again, thank you so much. And I look forward to reading your material and just learning more from you as we get to know each other better. So have a great day, you guys, and we'll see you in the morning.